This is On the Other Hand. A podcast that explores politics and other issues of importance to Arkansans through conversations with community leaders. On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas, and Braver Angels is part of a national organization that aims to reduce political polarization by promoting honest but respectful dialogue among people of all political beliefs. We believe our progress as a community and country happens when we actively seek common ground with the other side so that problem solving can occur. Well, hello and welcome to On the Other Hand. I'm your host, April Chatham Carpenter, and I'm here today with my co-host, Glenn White. I'm excited about today's conversation. We're getting ready to speak with another community leader in Arkansas who is helping us work towards solutions. Glenn, who do we have joining us today?
April, I'm pretty excited about our guest today. His name is Ray Hanley, and I'm sure a number of people out there already recognize who that is. He's been very active in the community for decades, I should say. I met him when I first came to Arkansas, which was in 1984. I had been an active member of Sierra Club, an environmental organization, down in Mississippi for several years. So when I moved up here, the first thing I did was look up the Sierra Club's local group. And I attended, and one of the activists at that time was Ray. He was active in advocating for environmental causes. He liked to go hiking and being in the outdoors. And interestingly, for me, was that I discovered pretty quickly that Ray was generally a conservative politically. And in some ways, that was a little bit surprising to me because I associated conservatives with not being on board with environmental issues. But in fact, he was not the only one. There were several conservatives who were politically conservative in other ways, but were strongly in favor of a robust environmental and conservation set of actions and values. So to me, that was important. It was one of the first times I had that experience where I found out that politics doesn't always entail a clear division among various views and values.
You've changed a lot in this process, Glenn. I know since you joined Braver Angels in terms of that, you've met a lot of conservatives and found that we are indeed nice people. So, hey.
Well, I knew conservatives are nice people, but I have found there's a lot more nuance to it than I realized at one point. Absolutely. Now, in terms of his career, he's been pretty busy and he's had a productive career. He can tell us more about that a little later, but some of the things I do know about him, he's been in both the public and private sector. I actually found this out just recently, that Ray has authored 21 books, and most of those are about history. And along the lines of history, particularly Arkansas history, many of those who are listening, you may recall from reading the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and over the years, this feature called Arkansas Postcard Past. That's Ray's baby. He has for years, I guess for decades, really just been posting postcards that are of interest and, you know, pose different elements of Arkansas history. And then some of the other things, just a few highlights, then we'll let him tell us more details. But I know he's in the past been president of the Arkansas Foundation for Medical Care. He has been the client industry executive at EDS, and you may remember Ross Perot when he ran for president. EDS was Ross Perot's organization. And then during the Huckabee administration here in Arkansas, Ray was the director of Medicaid. Now, he's gotten a lot of awards. He's done a lot of things. He's a marathon runner. He's biked on 5 continents, and I'm glad we've got him in between his biking trips. So there's a lot about Ray, but I'm going to let him start to tell us a little more about those things, and we'll kind of go from there. So, Ray, welcome to On the Other Hand. We appreciate you joining our podcast. Let's start by having you tell us a bit about yourself. Just fill in some of the blanks from that introduction that I gave. Anything that you want to tell us about your past and current work and community activities?
You know, I was born in Hot Springs, grew up in Malvern. Parents that didn't finish the 8th grade. I was the first in my immediate family to finish high school, let alone college. I spent 28 years at Arkansas DHS in every single program, including child welfare work for 5 years, where the state actually gave me a social work license, even though my degree was in business and economics. There weren't a lot of MSWs around then. And then I spent 16 years as the Medicaid director under three governors, starting with Bill Clinton's, and had a chance to do, you know, Our Kids First and a lot of other things during that tenure.
I didn't realize that you had been through three different governors doing that, so my mistake.
And I was the compromise candidate because Bill Clinton was in a bind. His wife had a candidate and his mother had a candidate, and he was stuck between the two of them, beating on either side of him. And I was offered up as the compromise, and that got him out of a bind between Hillary and his mother.
That's a great story.
Really? Okay. So what else? I know, you know, I mentioned about the Sierra Club. Any other things you want to tell us about maybe your community involvement, present or past?
You know, the biggest thing I'd done was probably on the private side, you know, 12 years at the Arkansas Foundation for Medical Care, which is a serious, a nonprofit government contractor. But I had the chance to, in 2013, when Medicaid expansion was on the legislative agenda and nobody thought it could pass, including Max Brantley, who told me that it had no more than a 5% chance and I was silly to even try. I organized 35 organizations, Hospital Association, Cancer Society, AARP, a lot of others, into a group called AR Works, AR Health, who spent every day lobbying at the Capitol to pass Medicaid expansion. We had a war room across the street where we met every evening. And when the dust settled, the votes were counted, Arkansas passed Medicaid expansion in the first Republican majority the state had had in 140 years. Until the election of 2012, there had not been a Republican majority since Civil War Reconstruction. And, you know, I am most proud of having helped lead that effort, which eventually insured another 250,000 low-income Arkansans.
That was a biggie, and I remember that time, and I think for the first couple of sessions, it was really tight. It was down to the wire, but your group came through.
You had to renew it every year, and it you had to beat back the it's Obamacare, and we don't like it group for, you know, the first couple of years, but I think it's here to stay now.
Yeah, it looks like it. Okay, well, kind of along those lines then, let's get into your political leaning, your political views. And as you know, in Braver Angels, we talk about red and blue, red being more conservative leaning, blue more liberal leaning. And I've characterized you as a conservative. Why don't you tell us more about where you see yourself in that area?
Truth be known, I have disdain for the major faces, leaders on the both sides right now on the, you know, in the Senate, for instance, either party. But I strongly believe in healthcare access, and I would do universal coverage tomorrow if I could. On the other hand, I think able-bodied adults, if they're going to, you know, get benefits, there should be some personal responsibility involved, whether it's a work requirement or personally, I'd like to see requirement to adhere to a, you know, plan of health improvement if you're on, you know, public benefits, whether it's, you know, smoking cessation or whatever. I am have decided the pro-life view. I think, you know, elective abortion needlessly takes a, you know, human life. But on the other hand, I think we need to do more to support mothers and kids. You know, the state needs to expand postpartum coverage to 12 months, like a number of other states have done, instead of just the 60 days it has now. We need universal pre-K. We need to do more to support mothers and kids and families, which I think is a area of common ground, I hope, between you know, the left and right, that pro-family policies are something that hopefully both sides could join around.
Okay. So it sounds like you're not just really, you're certainly not a hardcore blue or red, either one. You're some shade of purple, I guess, huh?
I think so. I can hold both sides of disdain, depending on the day of the week and the issues.
Okay. So when being in kind of the middle sometimes, or having potentially conflicting views, gets people mad at you from both directions, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I Facebook argument now and then with, you know, but which I try to do better on that, but at the behest of my kids. But I like politics and I like to argue. So what can I say?
Okay. Well, tell me this then. So I called you conservative and red, but let's just say you're purple. Given your purpleness, how would you describe how you came to adopt those positions? What are the personal values in your life that contribute to that, or maybe even some important experiences in your life that led you to have the views that you do?
You know, I spent my first 10 years at DHS. I moonlighted three nights a week at Children's Hospital as a financial counselor, and got to know a lot of families, you know, up close and personal. I mean, I got to know the family and the parents of the little kid that had hemophilia that presented in the ER 52 times in 1 year. I sat down with a man one night to try to find some coverage for his kid, which was not nearly as easy then. His occupation was a chicken catcher. And I said, well, what's that? He said, well, you know, when the truck comes to get the chickens, I goes out and catches them. So, you know, then later I had a chance to do Our Kids First. Huckabee let me do that. I sat with him with a stopwatch and timed the outreach and enrollment commercials that he did that went on TV, and come to have a lot of respect for him. And this is obviously, you know, pre-Fox days and a lot of things, but he did more to, as a Republican and conservative Republican, to expand healthcare in this state than certainly any of his predecessors had done, certainly far more than Bill Clinton did. I sat with him one morning at breakfast that I hosted between he and the Catholic bishop here, and the issue was whether or not we could use a Bush era loophole that lets you extend Medicaid coverage to undocumented pregnant women with the theory that their unborn child was the citizen and could be covered. And after a 15-minute conversation, he said, well, we need to do that. It's consistent with my pro-life views and it's good business. They're going to be born a citizen. They need to be healthy. And so he let me, this very conservative man let me extend health coverage to undocumented pregnant women. And he took a pounding from the right side of his party, but he would not back down. On the other hand, I had a chance to work with you know, Democratic legislators who were reasonable and pragmatic and knew how to compromise, like Jay Bradford and Jody Mahoney. I had a great deal of respect for men like them. And Mike Beebe is a senator I did a lot of work with on the Republican side before everybody was a Republican. Senators like John Brown from Siloam Springs and Carolyn Pollan from Fort Smith. I had a chance to sit before legislative committees, you know, several hundred times, and got to know close up legislators from both parties. Some were despicable, like, you know, a couple that went to prison, but then there were real leaders on both sides. And then again, the Medicaid expansion was only possible because we hammered out a compromise and had very bright, articulate young Republican legislators who were willing to step up and support that. So I've seen compromise and bipartisan work up close, and I have a great deal of respect for it. And there's just not enough of it nowadays.
Well, wow. I had no idea, Ray, that you had worked across the political aisle in so many ways. And thank you for the work that you've done over the years to help care for the people of Arkansas. I mean, that's what I really hear with the work that you've done, and certainly the stories that you got to hear as you were listening to folks during those during that time period and the initiatives that followed from those stories.
And if I could, I would tell you one more story
Oh, I'd love
about
to hear.
our kids first, which the governor, when he agreed to expand coverage at this meeting that was actually called to figure out ways to cut the Medicaid program, and he did a reverse on that and agreed to expand coverage for kids. He called me before I got back to the office and said, "I've got a name for this. Let's call it Our Kids First. What do you think?" I said, "That's a great name." So instead of calling it Medicaid, it became Our Kids First, and we marketed it as insurance. He did the PSAs that way. So we did an outreach enrollment meeting one night in Mena, Arkansas, in Polk County. And this man, he applied for his four kids, and he told us that before our kids first, it was just Medicaid, and that Medicaid was welfare, and he wasn't going to put his kids on welfare. When he had antibiotics prescribed, he bought them at the feed store.
Oh,
And
wow.
now he can get insurance, and there's a little $5 copay, which helped his dignity, and it looked and sounded like insurance, and it didn't say Medicaid on the card. It said our kids first insurance. And he, came out of the woods and signed up his four kids and could quit buying his antibiotics at the feed store. So that's a story I've never forgotten.
That's an amazing story. You know, our language and what we call things matters,
Yes.
because there's so much baggage in our heads about the things like Medicaid and other
Which
kinds of
is why,
drugs. Yeah.
when you poll, if you call it for a year, if you said Obamacare, people didn't like it. It was they were against it. But if you said, expand healthcare coverage or even Medicaid, that was okay. They liked that. But you couldn't you, if you said Obamacare, they went the other way.
Yeah, I heard that there was also a difference in the polling results of calling it Obamacare versus its original title of the Affordable Care Act.
Absolutely. If you use the Affordable Care Act, that sounded good to more people.
Yeah, semantics certainly matters. Certainly does. Well, I know that the way that you're connected with at least our podcast here today, although you certainly have a relationship in the past with Glenn, is with some of our work with Braver Angels. And, we are working in Arkansas and across the nation to reduce extreme political polarization and to really encourage people on differing sides to talk with each other, to work towards solutions where common ground can be found. And that's really your story, as I've been listening, is that you've worked across the political aisle and towards solutions where common ground can be found. So I'm interested a little bit about that. How did you do that? Your approach to the work that you did in government, in terms of what was important. You've talked about hearing other people's stories, and you've worked with multiple governors. So what kinds of communication skills were needed to do that?
I think the term all politics are local probably comes to play here. In terms of, expanding healthcare, if getting people coverage and ability to, see a doctor, if that doesn't move them, then I moved on to talk about their local hospital and how important it is to the community that hospital stay viable. And that if you expand coverage and give people coverage, then you're going to be able to much better keep that hospital open. You're going to provide paying customers, patients for the local infrastructure. It's easier for the doctor to stay in the Delta community. It's easier for the pharmacy to keep their door open. It's just good economic development for the community if we can keep people covered. And so I watching faces and things sometimes, well, people weren't necessarily excited about expanding what they thought was Medicare. When you turned it around and had all politics or local discussion on economics and community development, and you know, if you want to recruit industry, you gotta have a viable hospital. You can't let your hospital go under. If you want to have a healthy workforce, then people need to have access to care and preventative services if you want them to work. And you could watch people's moods and attitudes change if you turn the conversation around and talk about things like that.
So focusing on what they can get out of it, not just yes. the talking points of it, that are done by the media nationally, actually looking at the local needs.
And talked about, you can be there in that hospital and you can take credit for having kept the doors open. I mean, this is a good thing.
You recently, sir, agreed, Ray, to serve as a leader for the Braver Angels Alliance here in Arkansas as one of the leaders. And I'm curious as to what drew you to Braver Angels in particular.
Well, when Glenn asks you to do something, it's hard to say no, for one thing. That maybe it's the psychologist in him. I don't know. But I have been bothered by the polarization, both nationally and, in the state for a long time. And nationally, it's obviously worse because there's essentially a 50-50 divide and nothing happens. You can't pass anything. And there seems to be no room for compromise. The only indication that there might be, I guess, is today on this rail strike. If the Senate supports the House and blocks the rail strike, I mean, that'll be a departure from what we've seen. But if you can't get people to sit at the table and do something other than vote no because you want to deny the other side, anything, which is what happens too much, then you're not gonna move anything. If you can get people, what I've discovered, if you can get people in the room together at the table and just have a civil conversation away from the media, then I think you have a chance to get people to be a little more reasonable and see each other's viewpoints. And if not reach an agreement, at least reach a better degree of civility than too often exists now. And I don't think we're quite as polarized for obvious reasons. Like, it's hard to be polarized in a state that's got an 83% one-party majority, because I think they're going to pass what they want to pass. And there's finding a reason to compromise for that is going to be harder. You don't have the polarization on the state level that you do nationally, but at the same time, if you can get people to sit down at the table and talk away from the microphones and things, hopefully whatever that supermajority does can have some elements in it that wouldn't have been there without a conversation with both sides there.
Yeah, well, you've certainly seen that happen. I'm curious. This is off script of what I was planning on asking, but you mentioned earlier that until 2012, we didn't have a Republican majority in Arkansas. What you're a historian. I'm just curious. What happened that shifted things to be more Republican here?
Well, a lot of it is about Obama and about Obamacare, and it became too easy across the South, especially to demagogue Obama and his flagship accomplishment, which was the Affordable Care Act, which became Obamacare. And he didn't help when he said he was proud to have it called Obamacare. And that was just red meat to the lions. And I think the South, to their discredit, just went the other way on this. And the shift to Republicans has been going on since Nixon in the South. And Arkansas was frankly the last holdout state. If you think back, it's not been that long. You know, it's the congressional delegation was Dale Bumpers and David Pryor. You had at least two, you know, Democratic congressmen. You know, Mike Beebe for eight years. But that's all changed now. And when I was in high school, I think there was one Republican legislator, I think from Fort Smith, maybe two, maybe somebody from Northwest. There were two out of 135. And now you've got, I think, 82 out of 100 legislators or Republican legislators, almost 30 out of 35 senators are Republicans. So they don't have a lot of need to compromise. But there are some, I think, thoughtful people there who might be willing to, you know, if an honest broker comes along to host a conversation, like maybe Braver Angels, I think it can't hurt at all to get a chance to have a dialogue.
Well, that's what we're hoping.
Yeah, there's no doubt that right now the Republicans have that supermajority. So they're basically they're in a position of power that would allow them to do anything pretty much that they wanted. One of the values or beliefs that I have, and there's a lot of research in various areas to back it up, is the idea that having some diversity of opinion and thought is a positive thing, because it kind of goes along with the idea that no person or no party has 100% stranglehold on the truth. You can't be reasonably asserting that you know everything and every one of your positions is right. So even with a otherwise bad actor other side, there's usually some kernel of truth to be found in varying viewpoints. And so if you are open to not just exercising raw power only, but to listen respectfully, as you talked about, to the other side, then there are some things that can be gained and the final product can be better than kind of, you know, what one side alone might come up with. Any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, Sarah Huckabee says she's going to be the education governor. I think in many ways, her father was the healthcare governor, and to a certain extent, the conservation governor, because he got behind the conservation tax, as I recall. You know, if she's committed to this and the legislators are serious about helping her make her the education governor, I think there's room to talk about what we're going to do about the failing report cards that the majority of Arkansas schools have. There's room to talk about the benefits of universal pre-K to give particularly these low-income kids a head start with universal pre-K, which not only helps the kids, but it helps the parents that are trying to work who can't afford childcare. And finding a way to subsidize childcare is a family-friendly agenda, I think. If you're serious about encouraging people to work, then you need to look at, in a bipartisan way, the barriers to people going to work and keeping a job. And certainly one of them is the lack of affordable childcare, which is awful. I mean, you got too many people in minimum or close to minimum wage jobs. There's no way they can afford childcare, and there's not nearly enough subsidized childcare. So I think an area of bipartisan compromise is to look at the education agenda that the governor is going to set, to talk about universal pre-K, to talk about subsidized child care. If we, you know, you play to this pro-family agenda, I think there is a way for both parties to embrace a pro-family agenda. That doesn't have to be a blue or a red thing. It can simply be, you know, what is pro-family, what helps support the family, what better enables people to, you know, go to school and work, you know, good for the economy, and we just have to be willing to do it.
So if you want that, and that makes a whole lot of sense to me, but, you know, you've historically worked with a lot of people across the aisle, you know, on both sides. So you have a lot of experience and apparently competence at making that work. So do you have any thoughts or suggestions on how people presently in government and positions of power can adopt this respectful approach to listening to the other side and to work effectively across the divide?
I hope we can find a way to make it not a national issue, political conversation. And I think that's part of the problem is that, you know, for a long time, it tended to be about Obama. Now it's about Biden. Now it's about the National Democrats and their agenda. This needs to be about, you know, Arkansas and what's good for Arkansas and the people here, separate and apart from, you know, national politics.
Well, we've run out of time for now. We've so had a wonderful conversation so far with Ray, and we're going to continue this conversation for the next episode.
Thanks to our listeners. Well, we appreciate your joining us for this edition of On the Other Hand. We hope you enjoyed the first part of our discussion today with Ray Hanley. And be sure to check out the second part of our conversation with Ray, as well as any of our other podcast episodes of On the Other Hand. That link is available on the Braver Angels Arkansas website at arkansas.braverangels.org/podcast, or just find us on your favorite podcast site.
And Glenn, you know, we'd love to hear from our listeners about feedback on what they like about our program and suggestions for improvement, you know, ideas for speakers or topics, whatever they want to share with us. So if any of our listeners would have any ideas, please email us at otherhandar@gmail.com.
On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standridge of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was performed by the University of Northern Colorado Symphonic Band, Dr. Richard Main, conductor.
From your host, April Chatham Carpenter,
and Glenn White,
have a good evening, and let's all work to bring our community closer together.